Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sain, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Today on the show, we're doing something a little bit different. Instead of an analysis of the current political climate, we're heading back 8 years ago, almost to the day, when then-Senator Barack Obama held a political rally in Greensboro.
Thank you, North Carolina. It's good to be back. I love North Carolina.
That rally in Greensboro in 2008 was the night after the first presidential debate against John McCain. And after his address to tens of thousands of supporters, the man who would be elected president about 5 weeks later sat down with me in a tiny unmarked room in the old Greensboro train depot for a short one-on-one interview. Here's how an interview like this comes to happen. Our news director, Brent Wolf, got a call on the day before from the Obama campaign offering us 3 minutes. We accepted and began to prep. 3 minutes means about three questions if you're lucky, as Senator Obama already had a reputation for going on long. I came up with 5 questions, knowing I'd be lucky to get 4, and more likely it would be 3 or maybe even 2. I memorized the questions, not wanting to look down at notes while we talked, and prioritized. I also had it in mind that I would push for more than 3 minutes by saying something like last question just before the last question, if one of his press people started moving in pointing at their watch. As it turned out, I just barely got my 3 questions in. All of them were aspirational in nature, and I thought it would be interesting to go back now, as we near the end of his presidency, and see how President Obama addressed the issues I was lucky enough to raise. Okay, here's the first question.
It's obvious that the campaign thinks a lot of North Carolina, thinks that North Carolina is going to be an important state in November. It's also the state where a Democrat hasn't won in 30 years. What makes you think you can win the state?
Well, we're in the game right now, and you know, we're only 30-some days out. So, obviously things could always change, but I believe the people in North Carolina, like the people of the country, recognize that the past 8 years of failed economic policies cannot be continued. I think people are worried about losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing their health care, losing their retirement. I'm just in the rope line out here today. A woman, she said, I'm 72 years old. I've tried to retire 3 times. I just can't do it. I can't make ends meet. And you hear that everywhere I go. So I actually believe this is a potential sea change election. And North Carolina could be one of those states that marks that change.
Well, this one's easy to answer how President Obama did. He won North Carolina in that election in 2008 by 14,177 votes out of more than 4 million cast. He did it by building a coalition of college-educated white voters, largely from the urban areas of the state, and African Americans. It was an electoral model that barely lost this state 4 years later, however, when Mitt Romney won North Carolina by more than 92,000 votes. Today, that coalition continues to make North Carolina a purple state and has put us on a par with Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania as the key to winning the White House. Okay, now back to Greensboro 2008 and the second question. Specifically, it's about a topic in the news at the time, a North Carolina law that required immigrants who were in the country illegally to pay out-of-state tuition at community colleges. But it's really a question about immigration, and you get a very good sense of the president's dual position at the time of strong enforcement and his compassion for young immigrants brought here by their parents. Question number 2.
Recently, the State Board of Community Colleges here in North Carolina decided to extend a ban on illegal immigrants attending community colleges. In general, what are your opinions on access for higher education for illegal immigrants?
Well, the first thing is we shouldn't have illegal immigrants here. By tightening up border security, cracking down on employers who are hiring undocumented workers, and then giving a pathway to citizenship for those who are, so that they've got some legal status, those who are already here, that would solve the problem. But you know, we've tended to demagogue this issue instead of recognizing we're a nation of immigrants and a nation of laws. Now, I do think that I'm one of the co-sponsors of something called the DREAM Act in the Senate, which I think goes to the core ideals of America. It says if you've got a young person who was brought here by their parents, say they were brought here at 5 years old, they went to public school all their lives, they've now graduated. For all practical purposes, they're an American kid. For us to deny them access to community colleges, even though they've never lived in Mexico, at least, you know, as far as they can tell, or they've never lived in Poland, or, you know, in my home state, there are tons of illegal immigrants from Eastern Europe, you know, is to deny that this is how we've always built this country up. And I think we don't want them in the underground economy. We want them contributing. And it makes sense for us to provide them some pathway. If they've been here a certain period of time and they've been good citizens, let's try to figure out how we can work them into the fabric of our society.
President Obama's record on immigration is very consistent with how he laid it out in 2008. He deported more people than any other president in history. Some of those who were deported were the so-called Dreamers. Then, in 2014, the president signed an executive order that shielded 5 million immigrants here illegally from deportation. That group included any children who were brought to this country illegally before January 1, 2010. Comprehensive immigration reform never happened, however, largely because of a stalemate initiated by Congress. And finally, question number three. As I predicted, it would be the last one, as the press flack began to swoop in, pointing at her watch. This one came from my then 6-year-old son, and it's about energy and the environment.
And finally, really quick, one last question. As we sit here, Western North Carolina is in a bit of a gas shortage. You mentioned last night some of your ideas on offshore drilling. Before I left the house this morning, my 6-year-old son asked me to ask you about the environment. And I'm wondering how you balance those two things, our energy needs right now and the longer term environmental issues that may affect future generations.
Well, I think we can, the technology is such that we should be able to do some offshore drilling in selected areas without endangering the environment. But we have to understand that drilling alone is not the answer. I mean, we wouldn't see any real production until 7 years from now. And even at its peak, we would obtain less oil than if we just increased our fuel efficiency standards to 35 miles per gallon. And even if we do all that, we still only would produce about 3 to 4% of the world's oil. We consume 25% of the world's oil. So we're gonna have to move off the oil economy. And that's why it's so important to invest in solar and wind, biodiesel, other approaches to our energy problems. And that's going to require an investment in science and technology. I've said I'm going to invest $15 billion a year, every year, for the next 10 years, until we finally have the kind of solution that can completely end our dependence on foreign oil and deal with the critical issue of climate change, the biggest environmental issue that we have.
My then 6-year-old son, who asked me to ask that question, is about to turn 15. He lives in a state that's one of the top for solar in the country, thanks in part to federal tax breaks initiated and extended by President Obama, and also to state tax breaks that ended last year. It's also pretty clear that President Obama was more hawkish about offshore oil drilling then than he is today. On April 20th, 2010, the Deepwater Horizon exploded, and the worst environmental disaster in American history began. That clearly influenced his thinking to be less bullish on offshore oil. The rise of fracking in the past 8 years certainly affected the market as well. After the Deepwater Horizon incident, Obama still went ahead with plans to open areas in the Atlantic Ocean off the North Carolina coast to offshore oil drilling. But he halted that plan earlier this year and last month formally signed the Paris Climate Agreement, making him the most environmentally friendly president in history. After my interview with then-Senator Obama in 2008, we walked out together, and he showed a little of that personalized campaign charisma.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Tell your son, great question.
Cool.
He's a cub reporter.
Maybe you're an Obama supporter and will be sorry to see him leave the White House in a few months. Maybe you're against everything he did and tried to do and can't wait for him to move on. No matter your political leanings, it's hard not to admit, I think, that he's handled a very difficult job with a kind of class and dignity that was very much apparent 8 years ago in a tiny, bare-walled room in the Greensboro train depot. Thanks for listening. The WUNC Politics Podcast will return next week with more interviews with insiders and experts. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play and listen to all of our politics stories on WUNC.org.